Session we're going to have on clerical identities. One of the things I regret is that the colleague Meeta Choudhury, who actually put together this panel and decided had the idea in the first place, can't be here. So it's very regrettable that our panel is reduced as a result. Apparently she's been seduced away to Louvain in Belgium for a journée d'études by someone much more illustrious than myself or anyone else. But we'll soldier on, I hope, the three of us, on this question of identities. Our first speaker is Megan Armstrong, Daniela Kostrun following. Megan has a PhD from Toronto, is currently Professor of History at McMaster, where she teaches early modern history, French history in particular. Her main interests are, I think, the religious history of 16th and 17th centuries, and her main publication to date, a book called The Politics of Piety, 1560 to 1600, deals with the French Wars of Religion, seen in the prism of, by the prism of prophetic preaching by the Franciscans. Who else? Her current research shifted geographically to the Mediterranean in general and the Holy Land in particular, especially with the arrival of the Bourbon dynasty. And her current project, book, if you prefer, is called The Holy Land and the Reinvention of the Catholic Church. That's a very modest proposal, I think you'd have to say. So, Megan, please tell us more about what it's all about.
Thank you. I should put the chronology in there, too. The project is running from 1517 to 1700. I'm just going to give the brief frame so you see where my paper today fits in, because it's one chapter of a manuscript that's five chapters long. And essentially, it's a study of Catholic religious and political engagement in the Holy Land, using the custody of the Holy Land as sort of my lens on this period, and how these profound religious and political changes are shaping Catholic engagement and explaining it. And to me, one of the most visible signs of Catholic engagement is actually the French monarchy. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. And of course, the custody of the Holy Land is in the hands of my friars, my Franciscan brothers. So with that broader frame of mind, the two big political and religious changes that are important to me that I think are useful for as analytic frameworks are the Reformation and the Ottoman conquest of the Holy Land in 1517. Both happened the same year, more or less. They're both, the Ottoman conquest is sort of ongoing between sort of November 1516 all the way through to the spring of 1517. Of course, then Luther, not within a few months, is going to be putting up the 95 Theses. I should mention in 1517, it's also important from the perspective of the Franciscan Order, which is a different chapter, because that was when it splits into two major parts, and then the Capuchins come along very quickly thereafter. And so that's actually important for my last chapter. But today I want to talk about the French context, and I'm putting out a fairly big frame because I'm just now starting to work through the chapter, and I'm really anxious to get some feedback on, especially thinking about French imperialism, because I'm really working at it from the vantage point of the Holy Land. So this is what I'm seeing in the records so far. So my paper today is intended to contribute to the growing body of work on the Mediterranean as an important arena of Bourbon imperialist engagement. Jeff Horn, Junker Takeda, among others, note the increasing economic integration of France and Mediterranean commercial networks, spurred by a number of factors, including closer diplomatic relations with the Ottoman Porte. The capitulations of 1604 expanded the reach of the state into eastern markets, privileging French ships in the transportation of Western goods, the establishment of French mercantile colonies in many port cities, and encouraging the manufacturing of French textiles and other products for eastern markets. Now, Marseille's centrality to Bourbon plans for expanding its influence in the Mediterranean was shown as well in its transformation into a powerful fortified port city, home to a growing navy. Excuse me. What deserves more attention to my mind is the religious character of Bourbon imperialism and the historic importance of Catholic communities, such as convents in particular, my Franciscan convents, as crucial sites of French political and religious engagement in the Islamic regions of the Levant. So my talk today brings together two elements, these two elements together, through a discussion of Bourbon intervention in the affairs of the custody of the Holy Land. And in particular, I will ponder Bourbon interest in expanding a French missionary presence in an ecclesiastical jurisdiction that for centuries had lain under the authority of an international body of observant Franciscans. Well, Jérôme Pommerade has quite rightly situated Bourbon intervention in the custody in the broader context of growing imperial rivalry with the Spanish Habsburgs. That's important to notice. The custody was had close ties to the Spanish monarchy. A more complex picture emerges when we shift the spotlight to the custody as a Catholic institution and study its distinctive character and function. I will suggest here that the custody, because it was grounded upon Islamic law, offered the Bourbon monarchy access to local and imperial Ottoman structures of authority that were useful for expanding French political and economic engagement in the Eastern Mediterranean. It functioned at the same time as a gateway to the most revered and powerful sacred landscape in the Christian tradition, one useful for legitimizing a French state still reeling from the impact of the wars of religion. So that's sort of the big picture. So a brief introduction of the to the custody, I think, will help set the stage for studying Bourbon engagement in its affairs. The custody of the Holy Land is a Catholic administration which was established in 1342 to manage Western pilgrimage to the holy places, which are located to this day in Egypt, Syria, and Palestine. The holy places are the sacred sites associated with the life of Christ. Most of these are found in Jerusalem and in its surrounding region, notably the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem and the Basilica of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. Now, since its establishment in 1342, the custody has lain under the administration of the Franciscan Order, and specifically that of the observant friars, who have held it since 1431. In fact, the observants remain in charge to this day, responsible for hosting pilgrims, performing the liturgical rites in the holy places, and tending to the material care of Catholic altars and the buildings of the custody. At the time of this study, the custody comprised roughly 100 members, both priests and lay brothers, roughly 50-50, and several convents. The revered status of the Holy Land among the three religions of the book ensured, moreover, that the friars operated in a religion that was extraordinarily diverse in terms of religion and ethnicity. The holy places were also shared religious spaces, carved up into altars that were distributed among the 10 Christian communities that claimed a home in the custody. In the Basilica of the Holy Sepulchre, for example, to this day we have 6 Christian communities that possess altars and in fact have monasteries in its walls. The 6 communities in the period we're talking about are the Greek and Armenian Orthodox, the Coptic and Georgian Christians, the Ethiopians who are on the roof, if you've been, and the Catholics. Finally, it's important to note that the custody functioned within an Islamic context, legal, political, and cultural, that significantly informed its character and its operation as a religious institution. It was first established, we have to remember, after all, under the rule of the Mamluk Turks, and was conquered in 1517 by the Ottomans. So it's several hundred years under Islamic rule. I mean, obviously, it goes back much earlier. But I think that's important to note that we have, by the time we get to the capitulations of 1604, the Holy Land has been under Islamic rule for over 3 centuries. So today, Amita got us together on the topic of French clerics, which is why we're both focusing on them in different contexts. So I'm just going to use one example of Bourbon engagement, and it has to do with their efforts to introduce French clerics. Now, the distinctive character of the custody as a pilgrimage institution and the complex religious and political landscape in which it operated is central to interpreting the nature and intent of Bourbon intervention in its affairs. As protector of the holy places, a responsibility conceded to the French state in the capitulations of 1604, the French monarchy became the official representative of Catholics and Catholic institutions within Ottoman territories, a role which the French state embraced with considerable gusto almost from the start. As early as 1606, for example, the records of the Propaganda Fide, which is, for those of you who don't know, in 1622, well, it actually starts at the end of the 16th century, we have multiple congregations, but the papacy, as of 1622, introduces a body that manages, oversees all missions in the Catholic world. But we have records from earlier in its archives as well. And so a document from 1606 in the Propaganda Fide, mentions that the French ambassador going in person to Jerusalem to resolve a particularly thorny dispute between the Franciscans and the local Georgian community over the jurisdiction of an altar on the site of Mount Calvary, one of the most important altars, obviously. Now, this was the site of Christ's crucifixion, located in the Basilica of the Holy Sepulchre. Conflicts such as these were not uncommon, and they often arose over access to and the usage of Christian altars, a reality of life in this complex religious landscape. So European ambassadors were frequently called upon by the Franciscans to come in and help, or by the papacy to come and help. So this kind of intervention is what the Venetian Bayo was doing still during this period, but had typically been the role of the Venetian Bayo in particular. So now we have the French ambassador and his officials intervening as well. So intervening in disputes between Catholics and other Christians to defend Catholic privileges was a matter of course for European ambassadors, and it's a responsibility the French monarchy took on early and quite seriously. It's very clear from the records of the Propaganda Fide, however, that the Bourbon monarchy was also intent upon expanding its authority at the expense of the observant brothers, who had long been charged with the administration of the custody. Now, one strategy was to increase the number of French clerics based in the custody. A letter sent by the French ambassador, Cournandin de Haes, Propaganda Fide in 1621, was particularly bold, and it requested both an increase in the number of French observants in the observant family in the Holy Land, and also the placement of a French friar in the coveted head office known as the Custos. So the head of the whole Franciscan administration was called the Custos. Now, Cournandin de Haes reasoned that the community was full of vassals to the Spanish state and thus enemies of the Turkish state, because they were obviously not enemies at the time, a relationship that he insisted endangered the holy places. His criticism, the French ambassador's criticism, highlights an important and distinctive characteristic of the Holy Land Brotherhood, namely that it was an international community. In theory, the custody was open to friars from across all the provinces of the order. In reality, the community was roughly 50% Italian, and most of these came from the Venetian state. Then we have sizable French and Spanish communities, which are about the same size, pretty much balanced throughout the medieval and early modern periods. And then we have a smattering of friars from other provinces. So with a few exceptions as well, the Italians were always appointed as the custos, and so I think that's very important to note. The custos was the highest Catholic official in the Holy Land. In fact, he possessed episcopal authority, and it was the custos who represented the custody in all dealings with Ottoman authorities, and also had authority over all visiting religious and pilgrims into the region. So he was the titular Catholic authority, which I think is very important to understand. So now the congregation of the Propaganda Fide, when they received this request from the French ambassador, said no. They argued not only that the Spanish state was a generous benefactor of the custody, which was true, but also that the Italian friars governed the institution, he said, quote, indifferent to nation. But the French monarchy continued to push for the inclusion of more French observants after this time. As late as 1681, the French ambassador complained to the Propaganda Fide that there still were not enough French observants in the custody, as if there ever could be enough, really. The observant brothers, we should note, voiced their disapproval at every turn. They remained a persistent and vocal advocate of their own privileges in subsequent disputes with the Bourbon monarchy throughout the 17th century. Now, though the Bourbon monarchy was frustrated in its efforts to promote French observant Franciscans, it had much more success introducing French Jesuits and Capuchins into the custody. As early as 1623, Capuchins and Jesuits began arriving in designated cities of the Holy Land with the active support of the French ambassador and the permission of the Propaganda Fide. The Capuchins came first and were given permission to establish communities in the port cities of Aleppo, Cairo, Beirut, Saida, and Tripoli. A small number of Jesuits arrived shortly thereafter. Now, these cities, which were home to French consuls and French merchant colonies, lay within the jurisdiction of the custody. The friars were responsible also for any kind of pastoral ministry to Catholics in the region. the regulations of the custody, which were negotiated between Catholic and Ottoman authorities, restricted Catholic pastoral engagement in the region to the Observant Brotherhood, one of the many reasons why the Observant Brothers reacted swiftly, protesting the decision of the Propaganda Fide and securing the support of the Venetian ambassador to the port, the Bayo. Now, the cardinals of the Propaganda Fide quickly hurried to assure the observance that the Capuchins would only, quote, enhance the Christian ministry in the region, not undermine observant authority. The observant brothers, however, were not easily reassured, which they understandable based on relations in Europe between these orders, and took matters into their own hands. Letters sent from the Capuchins and Jesuits to the Propaganda Fide and to the French ambassador talking about the experience on the ground show that the friars, the observants, wasted no time in asserting their own authority locally over the new missionaries, turning to the local Ottoman Cadi, for example, in Aleppo, in some of the other port cities, to help them stop the Jesuits and the Capuchins. Jesuit and Capuchin missionaries accused the observance of constant harassment, impeding their spiritual ministry, and in at least one case of unjustified imprisonment in the city of Aleppo. And this was involved two Jesuits in particular in 1626. The observant friars in turn accused their rivals of slander and exceeding their spiritual mandate in order to undermine observant custodialship of the holy places. The Propaganda Fide repeatedly sent out communiques to the missionaries clarifying spiritual jurisdiction between them. And in 1628, for example, after yet another heated dispute led the Propaganda Fide to remind the missionaries that the observant friars alone had spiritual authority in the Holy Land, so they still had control of the custody, but nevertheless the Jesuits and Capuchins also had permission to reside and administer the sacraments to the local merchants in the agreed port cities. So needless to say, conflict dogged relations between these orders throughout the 17th century and certainly into the 18th century. By the end of the 17th century, however, it must have been clear to the observant brothers that the Jesuits and Capuchins were now a fixture of the Catholic landscape in the Holy Land. The efforts of the Bourbon monarchy to introduce French missionaries were therefore successful. It's important to note, however, that the observants were able to fend off the penetration of the French missionaries into the central administrative structure of the custody, and just as importantly, they protected their jurisdiction over the altars in the holy places. And indeed, the French orders were never able to establish at the epicenter of the Christian Holy Land. Jerusalem, Nazareth, Bethlehem, these were cities that were home to the most important holy places, and they were never able to penetrate them. The French monarchy tried, nevertheless, several times to do so. A particularly serious push during the 1690s, for example, was effectively resisted by the observant friars with the active support of other local Christian communities in Jerusalem, the Greek Orthodox, the Armenian Orthodox, so forth. The objective of the Bourbon monarchy in this instance was to establish a consulate in Jerusalem, something that the state had tried to do much earlier as well in the 1620s. And in both cases, the lobbying of the friars frustrated the efforts of the Bourbon officials, who were rightly, accused by the friars of trying to use the consulate as a backdoor to the Jesuits. Because one thing Jesuits were allowed to do is to be hired as the friars of the consuls. So this was one way to sort of get the Jesuits into Jerusalem through the back door. So what do I make of all of this? Why do I think this incident is interesting? Well, I think these few examples are intended to highlight Bourbon interest in expanding the role of French clerics in the custody. The Bourbon monarchy intervened in the administration of the custody, however, in many other ways as well, that show that it was intent upon asserting its authority over the venerable Catholic institution. While I do think the French state was motivated by a desire to limit Habsburg's influence over the custody, I'm going to suggest two other reasons in addition that emerge when we consider, on the one hand, the importance of Catholic convents as points of contact between Western Christian and Eastern Islamic institutions, and on the other, the traditional function of the Holy Land as a vessel of Christian authority. And I think from these two vantage points, the custody emerges as a particularly important gateway to religious and political influence for the Bourbon regime in regions under Ottoman rule. So I'm going to begin with talking about the custody as an Islamic institution. That Catholic monasteries were crucial sites of political engagement makes sense when we consider the restrictions placed on Western Christian access to the Islamic regions of the Mediterranean. In the case of the Ottoman Empire, most Western contact was limited to the fringes of the empire, mediated through the port cities as well as Constantinople, which was obviously the seat of Ottoman authority. In contrast to the palaces of the consuls and merchant colonies, however, Catholic institutions, in other words, convents, certainly my custody, which is a little more complex an institution, could also be found outside of the port cities in diverse parts of the Ottoman Empire. The custody is a particularly good example of this because it presided over several communities located across Egypt, Syria, and Palestine. The custody thus gave Western authorities permitted Western spaces of operation, of access, within regions that were often beyond the reach of the consuls. But more importantly, it gave them access to Ottoman structures of authority, local officials, the court of the Cadi, even the local imam, that were essential for its political, economic, and religious interests. This is because the custody was itself, I'm going to suggest, was an Islamic institution, or more accurately, a hybrid Catholic and Islamic institution. And to understand its distinctive character, I'm just going to explain some of the ways in which we can see it as an Islamic institution. First of all, the custody was subject to the dictates of both imperial and Sharia law, so Islamic law. Imperial law is the law of the sultan. Sharia law, as you know, is the law governing the practices, the rights. So, for example, the custody was established in 1342 by an imperial decree, a firman, so the imperial court, the sultan. The functioning of the custody, moreover, as a pilgrimage institution operated through privileges granted by imperial and local Ottoman authorities. The rights, for example, to own, renovate, and decorate spaces, administer the liturgical rites, and host visiting pilgrims in the hospice of the custody, these were all privileges that you had to negotiate. The local cadi of the cities, the nearby cities, Jerusalem and Aleppo, in particular, are important for the custody, also oversaw much of the day-to-day affairs of the custody involving the liturgical rites and any kind of administrative business involving the operations of the custody. This meant ensuring the payment of pilgrims' fees, providing permits for rebuilding and also rebuilding spaces, and also for mediating disputes between the friars and other religious communities, for example, over the altars. Now, as these examples are intended to suggest, the regulation of the custody by Islamic law embedded the custody in Ottoman structures of authority, both local and imperial, making it an important hub of political engagement for Western powers in the region. Not only did Franciscan communities offer Western travelers, including diplomats, but not just merchants, pilgrims, anyone traveling, not only did they offer them places to stay as they traveled in Ottoman lands, and in fact, in many cases, they were the only option. You had to have permission, in many cases, to stay anywhere outside of the Franciscan houses. So not only did you stay with the Franciscans, but the Franciscans themselves were essential points of contact with local authorities. The Franciscans were, after all, local experts who understood how institutions functioned. They knew personally the Ottoman, local Ottoman officials. And they were useful for Western authorities because they were also a mobile Franciscan brotherhood. I think this is where the missionary character is very important as well to understanding their significance as points of access, political access as well as religious. So with this wandering brotherhood, they had permission to travel on their spiritual business, and they traveled widely in Ottoman lands on an array of matters. And indeed, the custody operated at the center of an important network of communication that stretched westward through the merchant colonies of the Levantine port cities to the major ports of Europe and as far as the Spanish colonies in the New World. And we can trace this through the global exchange and relics, pilgrims' mementos, for example. And then eastward to Constantinople and also the Franciscan communities in other parts of the eastern Mediterranean. So the mobility of the friars and their expert knowledge made them a valued source of information on a region that was important to the political and economic interests of the French state. And it explains as well why friars frequently were called upon to act as envoys and political mediators by Islamic as well as Western authorities throughout the medieval and early modern periods. So I've made the case for seeing the custody as a hybrid Catholic-Islamic institution that gave them an access that, frankly, I would argue was greater than the reach of the consuls or I think French ambassador was extraordinarily important, so I'm not going to make that case. But I do think they penetrate in a way that we haven't talked about. But I want the other side, because, of course, I work on religion, and I don't think you can keep religion out of this. I'm going to talk about Bourbon State in terms of Catholic imperialism and how perhaps we can think about that as an objective or part of how we understand their engagement. So beyond its political utility, I do think Bourbon engagement in the custody reflected a religious agenda that also deserves a bit more attention, one aimed at crafting a claim to global Catholic leadership. Now, this intent emerges when we consider, to begin with, the profound significance of the Holy Land as a sacred landscape within the Christian tradition, and secondly, the increasingly self-conscious Catholicism of the Bourbon monarchy from the reign of Henry IV onwards. Now, with regard to the Holy Land, while we do not have time to discuss this at length here, it's important to remember that the Holy Land was a fraught zone of imperial engagement among Islamic as well as Christian powers throughout the medieval and early modern periods, because it was the sacred landscape. As Adam Beaver has argued recently, Spanish patronage of the custody participated in the construction of Habsburg claims to spiritual legitimacy and hegemony. Bourbon intervention in the Holy Land after 1604 represented a similar effort to bring the home of Christ within the fold of Bourbon influence, anchoring its own claims to Catholic leadership in a region that was regarded by Catholics as the most powerful vessel of Christ's authority. It was the Bible, right? It's the material vessel of the Bible. What I find so intriguing, however, is that French officials frequently justified the recruitment of French clerics for mission in the region using a language of French exceptionalism, one that cast the established religious orders that were already in the Mediterranean, including my Franciscans and the Dominicans, as corrupted. And now this was not only visible in the disputes of the custody. An example from the French ambassador, the Comte de Sissy, who was often scathing in his letters about the older orders, in his letters back to the French state, also to the propaganda fide. He was writing in a letter in 1628 about a dispute in Constantinople where a few Jesuits that arrived had been kicked out for a lot of reasons, but the Franciscans and the Dominicans had also mobilized against them, and they got permission from the Ottoman Porte to kick the Jesuits out. I think the charges were conspiracy, but there was always you could always find an excuse. And so he was furious about this. And this is this dispute in Constantinople is going on at the same time that we have the Jesuits and the Franciscans and the Capuchins fighting in the custody about jurisdiction. And here Sissy writes in this letter regarding the Constantinople example, he said that, quote, considering the religious who usually come here, he says, it seems that the superiors seek out those who the galleys would reject in place of individuals' moral examples that would impress all nations. And he followed by praising the French clerics, in other words, the Jesuits who were there, suggesting that they were more spiritual than the other orders. And he goes on to say, regarding this matter, I can no longer delay in praising the Jesuit and Capuchin fathers who are admired here. And His Highness the French King asks that he may bring them here for the love of Jesus Christ, these good religious, and he obliges me to make this understood to the holy congregation. So this is a letter of the propaganda fide. And a much later example comes from a letter written by a French ambassador to the Porte in 1691. I've got many in between. During negotiations to introduce the Jesuits into Jerusalem. And so this one is exchanged by Jesuit Franciscan officials with the French state. So this is sort of an internal conversation they're having. And here, he goes on to say that they're frustrated by the resistance of the observance to letting the Jesuits in. And he went on to say that the observant friars of the Holy Land hate the Jesuits in the city of Jerusalem for good reason. He says the work of the Jesuits, he said, has been so edifying and their erudition so effective in furthering the progress of religion that they make the others fearful of sharing the duties of Christian charity among them. So this language should certainly be read as political rhetoric, but it's worth considering it as well whether it's reflective of a monarchy that has been transformed in the purifying fires of the wars of religion, emerging from it as an increasingly self-conscious French Catholic institution that was eager to flex its influence as a global Catholic authority. As we know from the work of Bernard Daumier and Eric Nelson, among others, Henry IV initiated an intense campaign to re-Catholicize France after 1598, a campaign which continued under the later Bourbons. Both the Jesuits and Capuchins operated on the front lines of this endeavor in France. We know as well from Benoit Pierre, that universal evangelization was one objective of the imperialist policies of Louis XIII and Richelieu, spearheaded by the Capuchin Père Joseph. So looking more specifically at the Mediterranean as a venue of Bourbon engagement, and I promise I'm almost done, Jérôme Pomerade has argued recently that the French zone had long articulated un destin oriental, a destiny that emphasized a role for the monarchy as a religious unifier and liberator of Jerusalem. Now, Pomerade's point is important to my mind, because it reminds us that France had its own sacred history in the Holy Land as the rulers of the Crusader Kingdom of Jerusalem. So with this broad religious frame in mind, I will suggest that Bourbon efforts to promote French missions in the Holy Land reflected a burgeoning French Catholic exceptionalism that also informed its imperialist ambitions in the Mediterranean. So thank you.